Finally, this is New Hampshire Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. President Obama and his Republican rivals often talk about boosting American manufacturing and bringing back U.S. jobs in this sector that have gone overseas. But many American manufacturers say the jobs are here. What's lacking is the trained workers to fill them. It's called the skills gap, and you hear more and more about it lately. A number of forces have created it, from the need to understand advanced technology on the factory floor to a feeling among young people that manufacturing isn't the most glamorous career choice. Also, community colleges, which traditionally have provided technical training, are facing smaller budgets. In New Hampshire, the legislature cut the community college system's funding by 20%. And there's yet another piece of this puzzle. Some analysts say businesses themselves have played a role in creating the skills gap, eliminating many of the in-house training and apprentice programs they used to provide, and hoping the public sector will provide them instead. Today in The Exchange, how to close the skills gap. Let's hear from you. How do you see the skills gap in your own workplace? That you have the jobs, but not the right people to fill them. Why do you think that's the case? And what do we do about it? Or if you're on the other end of this equation, wanting a job but unable to get the right training, give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org or post your comments on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us in studio is Tom Horgan, President and CEO of the New Hampshire College and University Council. And Tom, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Fred Coker, President of the New Hampshire High Technology Council. And Fred, welcome back.
Good morning.
And also with us, Jim Roach, President of the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire. And Jim, thanks for making the time this morning.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, and Jim, let's start with you. What are you hearing from your members at the BIA? How significant is this skills gap?
Just as a quick backdrop, the Business and Industry Association started 99 years ago as the New Hampshire Manufacturing Association. So our roots run pretty deep in manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, and we have roughly 400 members statewide, and I get out a lot throughout the state talking to members about their issues and challenges. And I, over the last year or so, and perhaps even longer, keep hearing this recurring theme. We have jobs that are going unfilled because we can't find the right skill sets, you know, for the Upper Valley, Manchester, southern New Hampshire, the seacoast, I mean, everywhere throughout the state. And it just occurred to me that this is really odd because we have, you know, relatively high unemployment, certainly across the country and in the New England region. And although New Hampshire is faring better than the rest of the country, still 5.2% is higher than the traditional 4%, which is considered full employment. And so it just struck me as really odd. What is going on here? Why can't these unemployed individuals find work at these manufacturing companies? And you know, knowing as much as we do about manufacturing, you know, those in the industry know that it drives New Hampshire's economy by virtually any measure, contribution of gross state product, number of employees, average wages, exports. It really is the driver. Advanced manufacturing and high tech drive New Hampshire's economy. And so, and the positions that are going unfilled are really tremendously good positions in terms of wages and compensation. And so it just seemed really weird that we have so many people looking for work, and yet we in the manufacturing sector and high tech sector, and we just can't seem to be able to fill these positions.
Yeah, very frustrating at a time when everybody is saying jobs, 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 economy, manufacturing is so important. Why do you think that's the case, Jim, that there are people wanting jobs, there are workers wanting employees, and the two can't get it together?
Yeah, I think there's a mismatch between the I think there are a number of reasons. I think there's a mismatch between the skills available and the jobs that are not being filled. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that. We hear a lot of complaints about kids graduating from high school and post-secondary institutions lacking in basic math and science skills, again, after going through math and community college curriculum, so lacking in basic training and having to go through some level of remediation at the workplace if they are indeed hired. We have out-of-date stereotypes about what a manufacturing facility looks like. Now, most of the facilities that I tour and have seen, you know, you could almost literally eat off the floor. They're very clean. very healthy operations, and yet the lagging stereotypes of dirty, grungy places where you're bound to have an accident and, you know, be maimed for life, those just really don't apply anymore. So there's a sort of lagging misperception out there. And then, as some folks have noted, we've sort of lost a generation or two of manufacturing families. You know, when the manufacturing, many manufacturers left the Northeast after the Second World War and moved to the South, a lot of these facilities closed down. And so, you know, the parents lost their jobs and the kids certainly didn't want to go into what they felt was a dying industry. And so we've lost a generation or two of families that were sort of acclimated to manufacturing, and they've, you know, turned their attention elsewhere. So I think there are all kinds of reasons.
Right.
I'm certainly not an expert, and I'm sure other guests have their own ideas.
Well, what do you think, Fred Coker, again, with the New Hampshire High Tech Council? What are you seeing, hearing? What are your thoughts on this?
I was talking with Tara Reardon, the Commissioner of Employment Security, recently, and I said, where are the biggest skill gaps? And she said, in the middle. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, people that are going through business school and are headed for management, she said, that's okay. She said, entry-level people coming in for assembly, for instance, that's okay. It's the technicians in the middle. And let me just get on a list of those skills, those jobs. Computer engineering and programming, huge gap, huge in this state and across the country. Quality control engineering, basic math is missing in specifically its applications, specifically on the manufacturing floor. Blueprint reading, product assembly, AutoCAD, database software, electronic board assembly, computer skills in general, drafting, and just problem solving. Problem solving, if I've heard that once, I've heard it 100 times, that graduates coming into a very high-tech company are really drowning in the ability not to problem solve. They can't do it because they're not used to it. And I think that goes back, of course, to the education, and that is, are we teaching our students how to problem solve in general? Yes, they're learning engineering skill, engineering. They're learning the liberal arts curriculums are very important. But are they being exposed to problems in the real world of business and manufacturing and tech while they're in college and given the chance to problem solve as students before they get on the job? Big problem. And I also sat with a group of manufacturing executives recently, including the individual who will be your guest in a few minutes, and the one word I heard the most around the table that's missing is math, 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 and its applications.
Even with all the focus on math, with No Child Left Behind,
right,
and, you know, testing, testing, testing for math, math, math. I mean,
yeah.
It seems like we've been talking about this for years, Fred.
No, we have, and we need to deal with it. It is a, you know, the world that we're in right now is changing. The job front is changing. Employment is changing in a dramatic way, not just because of technology, but because of the recession, where companies got used to doing more with less and never filled those jobs again. And so not only is there a skills gap, there are fewer jobs available.
Okay, so Tom Horgan. We've heard from Jim and Fred. Education, education, math, math, math. What do you see going on? Why aren't New Hampshire colleges and universities turning out the workers that these businesses need?
You know, it's a complicated question, and it takes a lot of conversation and partnerships. And the reality is colleges and universities, public and private, are businesses. And who are their clients? Their clients are their students. The students are paying the tuition. The students are driving the finances of the higher education institutions. The institutions have to respond to their clients, and the clients are telling them that they're more interested in areas not associated with math and science. So we've got to do a better job of getting the business community, the higher education community, public policymakers talking together about how do you communicate with students about these terrific opportunities, how do you get them better prepared in the K-12 system to go on to higher education. But the reality is running a college today, especially, you know, in New Hampshire, where our public institutions are not state supported, they're almost running private institutions with the level of state support they're getting. So they're responding to the marketplace, and the marketplace is telling them that their clients are interested in other subjects.
Jim.
Well, and I think that relates to another recurring theme that I hear among my members, and that is that and I know you've got somebody representing the guidance counselors on the air soon, but I hear from a lot of my members that guidance counselors steer kids toward college, which is great for a lot of kids. But not all kids are going to do well in college. In fact, a lot of kids drop out of college. There are many outstanding, honorable professions in advanced manufacturing and high tech. And if our high schools are steering kids to college because they have a sort of misperception of what it's like to work in manufacturing, excuse me, that certainly contributes to this problem. The demand is for a 4-year degree instead of kids that really ought to be many of them ought to be looking at a community college degree or technical degree and working in a great manufacturing operation.
I want to ask all of you about that bias factor too, but let's take a call if we could. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. First up is Chris in Manchester. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hello. How you doing?
Fine.
I'm an engineer. I have a background in manufacturing and design for the past 10 years, and I just want a quick comment. One thing is during a lot of people for the technical world, are trained by working or go to school. I went to a technical college. But what happens is businesses only hire for the needs they have to manufacture parts for that period of time. And then what happens is those jobs are gone, when there's no need anymore. Well, those people usually move on somewhere else with their skills are needed to another state or somewhere else. And then those people are gone. And when businesses say, oh, we need to employ those people again, they're gone. And the work in technical, it takes a couple of years to get the degrees or certifications to get to that level to be able to work in that industry. So you have to go where the work is. And that's one of the issues with business and also just in general with the training that goes involved with these degrees as well.
Okay, Chris, thanks for calling in. Fred Coker, do you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah. Let me just talk about it in this sense. What tech companies, and of course I represent the tech community here, are caught in what I call a big squeeze. The big squeeze is a situation where you have your baby boomers retiring and you have college grads coming in without the skills of the baby boomers and you don't have enough of them. So what do? You ask your baby boomers to stay on part-time and because they have the skills. And then you go to the H-1B visas, which go very fast once they're available. And you try to bring in engineers from China, from India, and so forth.
Skilled immigrants. And Fred, I got cut you off there. I do apologize. But we'll have time to follow up after a short break. Stay with us.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from the NEEP Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. From Woodstock Inn, Station and Brewery, now offering its signature oatmeal stout and last chair ale in 22-ounce bottles at local stores. Details at woodstockinnnh.com. And the New Hampshire Union Leader and newhampshire.com opening up the stories, events, and resources essential to living in the Granite State. More on weather, there's a skills gap in New Hampshire on the exchange on NHPR and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, debate over teaching evolution and climate change. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly cloudy, a chance of some passing showers, windy, highs from 35 to 40 for most of the state, lower 30s in the North Country. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the skills gap between what New Hampshire businesses want and the qualifications of potential workers. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you'll go to our page, join the conversation there. And Jim Roach, Fred Coker, Tom Horgan, let's just finish up, if we could, the question from our caller, Chris, who was saying, Fred, look, businesses are bringing people in and then laying them off, so it makes it tricky to get the skills and the employees together.
A lot of businesses hired people on a temporary basis because they didn't know where the economy was going or where Congress was going with a lot of its cuts, especially in defense. Defense is going to take a big cut, so a lot of companies that are doing business, tech companies with defense prime contractors, are holding the line, and they're hiring temps who will go permanent if things turn around. And, of course, companies, not all of those temps are going to be hired. So then they lay them off. I'd like to broaden this discussion real quick because this goes beyond tech and manufacturing. The February issue of Business New Hampshire magazine was very interesting, and they surveyed all the job posting sites, and the top four job postings on most of the job posting sites were number one, registered nurse, number two, physical therapist, number three, teller, and number four, software engineer.
Wow.
It goes beyond, I mean, we've been talking most about manufacturing and tech, but really those are the big job opportunities right now, according to job postings.
Right, but
Jim, go ahead, jump in.
As you'd agree, though, nursing and tellers are no doubt wonderful occupations, but they don't generate the wealth that technology manufacturers do. Right.
You know, I think part of his point was, and Chris, thanks again for that call, is that maybe it pays to have a broader education, a four-year degree, so that employees are more broadly skilled. They can take on different roles, Tom Horgan, than, you know, if they happen to face that layoff.
Right. Well, I think that's the traditional role of the four-year liberal arts college is to prepare someone for a career and a life. And we know that people are going to go through 6, 7, 8, 9 different careers throughout their lifetime. It's tough to tell a young person today that you ought to go and get a specific degree in a very narrow field. And as the caller said, that may change. Technology changes. Things change. You need to be able and agile enough to have a career that's going to take you in various directions. And you may start out, Jim, as a nurse, but you may end up the president of the hospital.
So you've got that broad background to prepare you for that.
Exactly.
Well, lots to talk about on that point, Chris. Thank you very much for joining us. I want to bring in another voice into our conversation. This is Gary Grollo, Senior Divisional Manager of Human Resources at New Hampshire Ball Bearing, which makes precision aerospace parts. And Gary, nice to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So we've been talking about the skills gap, Gary. How big a skills gap do you see at New Hampshire Ball Bearing?
Well, I think I would reiterate what your guests have already said, and that the skilled labor shortage is not just a phenomenon here at New Hampshire Ball Bearing. It's indeed statewide and across America. You know, in short, there's simply not enough people trained to fill the vacancies that we have.
And why is that, Gary? What do you think?
Well, I think that there's been a serious declination in the attendance of non-traditional education programs at the secondary level of vocational programs, to use a word. And those students who traditionally migrate into community college programs aren't doing so because they're simply not there. So there's been a conspicuous absence of enrollments for technical education at secondary and the community college level.
So where do you find the workers?
Well, it's difficult to find the workers. I mean, they're simply not there. I think that in my own experience, if I reach back to about 2005, I would call that a tipping point of sorts, because baby boomers were beginning to retire at thousands per day at that time, and by the time we've reached January of 2011, it's estimated that some 10,000 baby boomers were retiring a day. So there's literally not enough younger people entering the skilled labor into our training occupations. There's a massive void. Where do you get them? In a word, we have to manufacture them.
You got to train them yourself.
We got to train them.
Yeah. And how expensive is that?
Well, the training is very, very expensive, and I think that one way that we can offset those costs is, of course, to establish collaboratives that have been alluded to by your guests. This problem is not going to be solved by the private sector alone, by manufacturing alone. This is really going to take a consortium of the public and private sector.
You know, I heard a report, I think last week, Gary, that kind of caught my eye, knowing that I was going to be talking to you and the other guests today. In Germany, as you know, there's a long, long, centuries-old tradition of apprenticeships and, you know, learning on the job. Students even get paid while they work and while they're trained on the job. They did a great story about Lufthansa Airlines in Germany. Is that a model that we could see more of here in the U.S., or are American manufacturers afraid to engage in such expensive and long relationships because people tend to bounce around jobs here more? I wonder what you think about that German model of, you know, long apprenticeship.
Well, clearly, Germany's not insulated from the labor shortage either, because, you know, the Western world has sort of adopted the four-year education model. I do think, however, that they've done a much better job than most by aggressively pursuing their apprenticeship programs. And in fact, we're doing exactly the same thing here at New Hampshire Ball Bearing. And I'm currently in the process of reaching out to manufacturing engineering students, particularly at the University of New Hampshire, to put them through exactly that kind of program where they would get a holistic training, not just here at this division, but indeed with our whole company at our other locations. And in doing that and reaching out broadly, in the end, I think we'll have an employee well prepared to meet the challenges that we're going to have them engage in.
All right. Well, Gary, thanks a lot for joining us. I appreciate
Surely.
It. That's Gary Grollo, Senior Division Manager of Human Resources at New Hampshire Ball Bearing, again, which makes precision aerospace parts. The number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. If you're an employer, do you see this skills gap where you've got the jobs but not the right people to fill them? Why do you think that's the case? Or give us a call if you're on the other end of this equation. You're wanting a job but unable to find the right training to land that good job. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also join us on Facebook. And I'm interested in what you guys think also about that German model. And maybe I'll turn to you first, Jim Roach. You know, this idea that you get an apprenticeship when you're 17 and you stay with that company for life, it's expensive. But the German companies find it works. I wonder if that would work here in this country or not.
I doubt it.
Because people move around so much.
I think so. And I think we're just used to sort of individual freedom of choice and movement and everything else. I do want to comment on something Gary said. And that I recall when I was in high school, there was – I don't think we called it industrial arts. It was shop class or something. And you could take like an auto mechanics class or in my case, it was in some sort of a shop class. And I remember I made a toolbox, which I thought was pretty cool, but I realized that, you know, I'm not that was not appealing to me as a career. But a lot of kids in that class did go on into manufacturing careers, and I think, as Gary noted, I think a lot of that kind of education has gone by the wayside.
We call it the vo-tech,
right?
End
right,
of the building.
and so kids in high school today are not as exposed to manufacturing opportunities as they were when I was in high school, and no doubt that's for many good reasons, primarily budget considerations. But I think there, as noted many times, there are all kinds of reasons that are playing into this shortage of both people that want to be in advanced manufacturing and high technology, and the inability to find them with the right skill sets.
What do you think, Tom Horgan, about the bias factor that we talked about earlier? I want to read something to you from the Washington Post, which did a great piece recently on the skills gap. Attracting younger workers on the factory floor can be difficult. Machine shop classes have been cut in some high schools, as Jim said. Many high schools, moreover, would rather focus on helping children get into four-year colleges for vocation than preparing them for vocational pursuits. One guy they interviewed said, it's a glamour issue. What do you think about that?
Well, I do think that there's this perception that we're over-educating students today in the U.S., but the reality is very different. A generation ago, the U.S. was number one in educated citizenry with post-secondary education. Now we're like number 12 among the 25 industrialized nations in the world. We're truly not over-educating our students. We need to do a better job of getting students into college or into career paths and making sure that those students are successful once they get into college and that they graduate and they're able to go on to a career. But the idea that we're over-educating kids and we're sending way too many kids off to college, that just doesn't fly in the face of the statistics in a global economy. Other countries are starting colleges. Other nations are educating their students at a much higher rate than we are, and our advantage as a nation is at risk because of it.
What do you think about the idea that college isn't for everyone?
it's not for everyone. And the reality is about 70% of kids in New Hampshire tend to go on to higher education, so 30% are not. Those are of the students who are graduating from high school, and there is a percentage of students who aren't finishing high school. And at the end of 4 years, you take a typical eighth grade class in New Hampshire. 4 years after high school, about 20 to 22 of those kids hold a post-secondary degree. About 80 of them don't hold a post-secondary degree. That doesn't sound to me like we're over-educating. It sounds like we're under-educating. And part of it is we've got to do a better job of making sure they complete college once they get into college. They've got to be better prepared. Students who, you know, in New Hampshire right now, you only have to take math for 1 year in high school. If you take math in freshman year, you don't take math again until you show up at the community college, guess what? You can't do math. So we've got to do a better job. We have an initiative that Jim and Fred have helped us with on State Scholars that says you're going to pledge that you're going to take 4 years of math in high school, you're going to do a rigorous academic program. You're going to be prepared to either go into the workplace or go on to college and be prepared to do the work. And we need to address that.
What about, and I might want to hear from everybody on this, Gary Grollo's point, and I'll start with you, Fred Coker, on, you know, he said, look, we are doing the training. We just can't find the right people. So we're doing it.
Yes.
I have read from more than one analyst on this that the in-house training programs, apprenticeships, and so forth that you used to see in manufacturing, many of them have gone away. What about that idea that if businesses really want these trained workers, then they need to, you know, cough up the bucks and do it themselves?
I'd be interested to know when they went away, because now they've got to be coming back. There are training programs in New Hampshire manufacturing facilities. They have to.
In the facility, not at the community
In the facility.
Yeah.
They have no choice. And that's why they're bringing back their retirees, because the retirees are helping to train those new employees. Laura, there's another force at work here. It's demographic. The Federal Reserve Bank of Boston just recently put out a report that not only is the population growth in northern New England getting smaller, the growth is not there anymore, but that by 2020, the grads entering the workforce, the college grads, will be 15% smaller than the number of those retiring. That is a very worrisome trend because it just suggests that there'll be fewer people available. So you add that to the skills gap, and you have a worrisome situation for both business leaders and policymakers.
Okay. And to you, Jim, too, this idea that businesses need to step up and do this.
Yeah, I think many leading employers in manufacturing in New Hampshire are doing just that. Hypertherm, for example, has something that they launched in 2007 called the Hypertherm Technical Training Institute, and they have trained nearly 400 employees since they launched that thing, and I think they've hired a bunch of them, and today they have positions that they're still looking to fill. Whalen Engineering in Charlestown has a program that they just launched last year, Introduction to Manufacturing Technology, where they bring in high school students to Whalen Engineering to see what it's like to work in an advanced manufacturing environment like that. So, and no doubt BA Systems and, you know, Goss International, companies all over the state are doing these kinds of things because they have to. As Fred and Tom know, and as we said earlier, you know, advanced manufacturing, high technology drive New Hampshire's economy. It is not dead. And if we want to maintain a high standard of living and high per capita income, we need to do whatever we can to encourage companies like those that I just mentioned to continue operating and growing in New Hampshire. And if we can't meet the skills gap, and if they can't meet it, and in many cases these companies are working hand in hand with the 2-year technical schools, community colleges, and in some cases even high schools. So businesses are taking the bull by the horn often, and the community college system and post secondary educators are have geared up for this as well. So there's a lot of attention being paid to this issue. That's certainly the good news.
Right. And that's why I'm glad we're having this conversation, because it's also been said, Jim, that, you know, all the headlines about manufacturing, so-and-so lays off 1,000, so-and-so lays off 500. It gives some people the impression that manufacturing is dead. So that's the impression that you're working against.
Right. Now, I would argue that we will, if we do it right, we will always do well in New Hampshire and the United States in terms of research and development. That is one of our strengths, prototyping, high-margin manufacturing. When it gets to sort of commodity manufacturing, when you're making millions of widgets or gidgets, that's when that stuff's going to go
offshore.
That's
where the layoffs are
right.
happening.
But, and those are in lower-skilled occupations and lower-wage occupations. So we want to stay on the front end of that continuum, R&D, prototyping, high-margin manufacturing and technology jobs.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Stephanie's waiting in Nottingham. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi there. First, I wanted to say that I think community colleges and technical schools don't teach critical thinking. They teach people how to perform tasks often so that they can do entry-level work in these manufacturing companies. But I think there's a stigma. Like, I don't necessarily want my children going into this field because you get pigeonholed into specific skills, and then when the manufacturing company leaves town, what do these people do for work? I mean, this is the stigma from two generations ago in the Rust Belt. You know, I mean, I think people want a broader education so that, you know, when the economy turns south, there's more for people to do.
Okay. Stephanie, thanks for calling. And that second point we talked about before, gentlemen, but we might pick up on it. But her first point, I think to you, Tom Horgan, community colleges don't teach the critical thinking and the problem solving that Fred Coker said are so important. What do you think?
Well, I think the community colleges would probably take issue with that. You know, they used to be called technical colleges. Today, they are community colleges, and their largest growing programs are more in the liberal arts, more in the critical thinking skills. But at the same time, they're doing important work around advanced manufacturing and technology areas. And so I think we need, in a 21st century world, we're going to need people who can do specific skills and who also can think critically and can maneuver themselves through a very diverse and complicated work environment. And so we, the higher education community, has to do a good job of making sure that not only do they have those critical thinking skills, but they also have some specific skills that business and industry need so they can go out and actually get a job in high demand areas. But as those technologies change, they've got to be competent enough and agile enough in order to change along with it.
That was the theme that we got from an earlier call. I don't know if Jim or Fred, you want to address. Fred, you want to address the question? Stephanie raised it, but it was raised before, too, the idea that it's better to have a broader degree than a specific degree because when the factory leaves town, you're out of luck.
I had a CEO say to me one day, I'd rather have a graduate come in to me with a liberal arts education in general, but a professional degree as well. The combination makes them relevant to the company. That's the or some work experience that is relevant as well. That combination is optimum for an employer.
Yeah, it can be expensive, though, boy,
it
to pay for
and
all
and
that.
It is expensive, no question about it. I think Tom makes a good point about the community colleges. I think they've changed. I really do. They're not technical schools anymore. They are community colleges, and frankly, they're bulging right now with students because they can't afford to go to four-year schools.
All right. Lots of calls after a short break. Thank you for that one, Stephanie. Also, we'll hear from a high school guidance counselor, get her take on this issue of the skills gap. So stay with us.
Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday, doesn't shy away from the big questions.
So does America need to produce more scientists and engineers?
And let's talk about
signs of an early spring, that we humans have more in common with gorillas than we think. And where does the dark energy live?
I'm Brady Carlson. Join me as I sit down with Ira to discuss scientific questions of all kinds. We'll be at UNH Durham on May 1st. For tickets and information, visit nhpr.org.
This event sponsored in part by NEBCO and the University of New Hampshire.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. And Nathan Wexler and Company, CPAs and business advisors, serving entrepreneurial clients who share a passion for competency, integrity, and community enrichment. 224-5357. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, New Hampshire Republican Congressman Charlie Bass joins us. You can email us your questions for Congressman Bass before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And then be sure to join us for that tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, we're looking at what's called the skills gap in New Hampshire. Many manufacturers say they have trouble finding qualified workers for job openings. Join us with your comments and questions at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We go now to Kim Lavoie. She's high school guidance counselor at Newt High School in Milton, New Hampshire, chair of advocacy for the New Hampshire School Counselors Association. And Kim, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking about the skills gap, Kim, and I think no doubt you've heard part of the conversation. And what keeps coming up, Kim, is this bias among students and parents and maybe even guidance counselors like yourself against manufacturing jobs. I wonder what you think. Are kids being dissuaded from pursuing these careers, even though, as we're hearing, there are very good jobs to be had here?
I think there is a bias. I do believe that. One thing that we hear a lot as school counselors, if you're trying to move students towards any type of technological program, that the student and the parents are like, well, I'm not going to send my child to work in a factory. They're just going out of business. And trying to really get them to understand that it's more than, you know, what their parents' factory line work was. It is seen as, when they're looking at careers, it is definitely on the bottom line of the totem pole. I mean, we have all of our high schools have career tech centers that they can send their children to, but they are signing up for the health sciences, they're signing up for the animal sciences, they're not signing up for the ICAMs and the welding and things like that.
So what do you do about that, given that, you know, I'm sure, about the excellent jobs that are out there, about this mismatch that we keep hearing about, that there are good jobs waiting and nobody to fill them?
I think there needs to be even more information out there. I mean, I'm getting ready to have my students look at programs in the other schools, the career tech programs. The career tech centers come in and they're like, look, there's all these jobs out here. This, you know, we can't fill these positions. I just think we need to do a better job at explaining what those types of jobs are. And on my area, there's not a lot of work. There's some, but there's not a lot of, I think the manufacturers need to pair up with the schools better to give them maybe those internships opportunities, maybe those job shadowing opportunities to see what it's all about.
You know, talking again about this bias issue, how do you as a guidance counselor, Kim, handle the following situation? You've gotten to know a kid, you know that he or she really is very good, perhaps with his or her hands or with computers and more the technical line of work. And so you say to the parent, you know, I think your kid would get a good job at a high-tech factory. And the parent says, no way, my kid is college material. I want him to, you know, be an English major. How do you deal with that, with them saying, don't pigeonhole my kid?
I know, it's always a challenge because you're trying to find a good match that the parent as well as the student can live with. And what I would encourage them to do is, you know, don't just take one thing right off the table. Look into it more. See, you know, maybe hook them up with a company to have the child go in and look. And I do talk about I heard them earlier talking about the liberal arts. It's like, so you want to leave with a 4-year liberal arts degree without any specific skill, that could be a challenge too. It's the same with the parents that say, no, my child's going to a 4-year university. Okay. And they're going to leave with $30,000 in debt. Are there jobs out there for them with that university degree? I think that there is a training program for every single person, and it's being able to find the right training with the right fit for the student, but also being able to educate the parents that there are more opportunities out there.
You know, we're talking about kids and parents. What about guidance counselors, Kim? Do you think some of your colleagues are a little bit biased against this sector?
I think that there are some areas in the state where one of the things that they focus on is we have 100% university acceptance rate for all our students. And a lot of it comes from the community itself. Saying we only want our children are only going to 4-year colleges. They're not going to these community college or these trade schools, and it ends up infiltrating the entire community, which it does affect how the guidance counselors are being told they need to guide their students.
Well, Kim, it's good to talk to you as always.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
All right.
That's Kim Lavoie, again, high school guidance counselor at Newt High School in Milton. You can join us with your questions and comments on the skills gap at 1-800-892-6477. Gentlemen, that was real interesting. I want to go back to our callers. But Tom Horgan, what do you think about some of the points that Kim made there?
Well, I think Kim makes some legitimate points about, you know, parents want the best for their children. And, you know, you look at the statistics. And, you know, if you have a four-year college degree, you're going to be unemployed at half the rate of someone who only has a high school degree. You're going to make $1 million more over your lifetime. But that doesn't mean that you can't or shouldn't go into a high-tech, high-skilled position, as well as get a well-rounded, balanced liberal arts education at the same time. We, you know, we talk a lot about STEM, but you know, there seems to be a movement now to talk about STEAM. STEM is science, technology, engineering, math. Well, not everybody can do science, technology, engineering, and math, but if you do STEAM, you do science, technology, engineering, art, and math. You know, the arts are important too, and we have to have, you know, a commitment to a well-rounded, well-educated person who can be successful. And, you know, there are terrific opportunities at the colleges. There's the technology incubator at Dartmouth, the Green Launching Pad at UNH, the Business Accelerator at Southern New Hampshire University. These are the emerging technologies and industries that are going to be important to New Hampshire's future. The colleges have to prepare the workforce of the future to do that. There's got to be better communication between the business community and higher education. And public policymakers need to step up to the plate and say, if we're going to have a well-educated, high-skilled citizenry, we're going to have to make some investments in that.
Yeah, well, what do you guys think about that, Jim? I mean, the legislature's certainly been cutting into our education funding here in New Hampshire.
I just want to pick up on Tom's comment. I think higher ed is responding to the demand out there. I mean, they are in many regards like a business, and they're going to meet their customers' needs. And if students and their parents are saying, I want a four-year degree, then that's what they're going to structure their curriculum around. And so I think it does go back earlier, both with parents and students and high schools. And I you know, the model that Wayland Engineering, for example, or what Wayland Engineering has is a wonderful model. And I'm sure there are dozens of other examples like that around the state. They're outstanding manufacturing employers that have been around for generations. And many of them during the Great Recession, the worst economy in 70 years, did not lay people off. And so many of these companies are very, very stable and did whatever they could to protect their primary asset, which is employees. So there are outstanding careers in manufacturing on the shop floor. And the shop floor today is not what it was 40 or 50 or 60 years ago. And so I think it is incumbent upon high school administrations, I think parents, and I think businesses as well, to change the perception of manufacturing as sort of a dying, not very exciting career path. It is manufacturing occupations present outstanding career opportunities for many kids that are not either destined for college, drop out of college, or end up with a four-year degree and unemployed.
Well, and that's another thing we've talked about on this program a lot. A lot of kids going into college, Tom, not so many graduating.
Right.
There's a
college dropout
rate.
Yeah, we've got to do a much better job of getting kids through college, having them be successful and being able to get out and get a job and pay their student loans. And that's a critical issue that we need to address.
Okay, and so the question about that Tom Horgan made, the point he made, Fred, about, okay, if the state really wants these trained workers, why are we cutting higher education funding, community college funding?
Well, obviously, the state is facing a financial crisis, but they made the wrong decision. cutting education funding is cutting the future of economic vitality in this state because they also cut scholarships. It was not just the operating expenses that were cut at the university system and the community college system. It was scholarships. But let me go to some nitty-gritty thing here real quick. You know, the Office of Workforce Opportunity in the state has an on-the-job training for New Hampshire unemployed to help fill the skills gap. And this is on the job. Companies will bring them in, and the wage rates are up to $33.65 an hour and up to 90% reimbursement by the Office of Workforce Opportunity. Great program. And they're retraining and training workers to fill some of these gaps.
Let's take some more calls. Lots of people wanting to jump in here. Stan is on the line from Nashua. Hi, Stan. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Great program. I was just thinking of you know, this was brought up earlier about the baby boomers. There's a lot of unemployed baby boomers out there with 401ks that were, just decimated. And the issue is they're laid off from jobs they probably had for decades. And they're willing to work. They have probably at least a high school degree, if not a college degree. And on my laptop right now, and Excel.
So, Stan, hiring trained, skilled older workers, one of you mentioned the baby boomers. You were talking about demographics earlier, I think, Fred Coker. What do you think? Should companies make more of an effort to reach out to these folks?
They are. They have to. It's the big squeeze I was talking about earlier, bringing in H-1B visa engineers from overseas and rehiring the baby boomers because they have the expertise and the knowledge and the time in. And these are companies that are going back to their baby boomer retirees and say, hey, come on in for part-time and help us out.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the – say the number of the visa again.
H-1B visas.
And those are the highly skilled technical workers that
by the State Department, U.S. State Department, and they're usually about this time of year, a new batch of those visas is released. They're gone in about 48 hours, and that's one of the problems. But, you know, it's also a matter of national security. They try to screen them. But it's one way of getting talent into a company. There are New Hampshire companies that have foreign nationals on their manufacturing floor from sometimes as many as 7 and 8 countries.
So let me ask you real quick, because later this week, the exchange is going to be looking at immigration and the New Hampshire economy from sort of 3 different angles on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. As you know, Fred, you know, immigrants powered the mills from all over the world in New Hampshire's history. So what role are immigrants today playing in this skills gap? Is it more the high-skilled, you know, super-educated immigrants that are coming in? There's no more sort of low-skilled jobs for
immigrants. It's across the board.
It's across the board.
It really is. Some of these immigrants have gone on to get good education and have become very key parts of workforces. Most of them, however, are going into the entry-level jobs of assembly.
So we still have those.
Not as many, but... We do, yeah.
All right, let's take another call. This is Russ in Conway. Hi, Russ. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I've been a member of the Vocational Advisory Board here at our local Career Tech Center for 30-something years, and I strongly suggest that those folks who have an interest in addressing this job skills issue become members of their local centers. We have there are several centers throughout the state. We're lucky here in Conway to have our center right here at our local high school. But each program has an advisory committee that advises the instructors and ultimately the school board as to what things should be happening. This can have a great effect on the job skills that these kids have an opportunity to see in their high school education.
So you're really attacking it from all fronts then, Russ. High school level, older kids, older college age students, and so forth.
Well, that primarily this is at the high school level.
I see.
The Vocational Advisory Committee advises the teachers and the school board as to what's going on in the real world, so that these kids, whether they're in the CAD program or the health sciences or machine shop or any of these programs, it's the linkage to the real world, so that the kids get an opportunity. One of the most exciting things we just happened. Senator Shaheen was here last week, viewing the kids in the robotics program. The program just started up last summer, and these kids have already been in competitions, and they're doing extremely well. And that is a field where, as Senator Shaheen pointed out, there's tremendous scholarships available, and there's a tremendous need as older workers are retiring. So these kids are seeing this stuff at the high school level,
even
up here in our town.
In the interest of time, I've got to let you go. Thanks for calling, Russ. This kind of relates to what you're talking about earlier, Jim Roach. You know, when you were in high school, these were the centers. They trained people with technical skills. It sounds like they're going on again here in New Hampshire. They're reviving again.
Well, I grew up in Minneapolis, so I was not in New Hampshire at the time, but these were in all of the high schools. I think there were 11 high schools in Minneapolis
at the
time.
Yeah, I remember the same thing.
Yeah, every high school had, and you, I think, as I recall, you had to go to one of these sort of more, hands-on sort of classes to graduate. And it was great exposure. And, you know, a lot of kids didn't choose those kinds of occupations for a career, but a lot did. And I think we've lost a fair amount of that over the years for a variety of reasons.
Right. I remember taking shop class and failing miserably. So I found out at an early age that was not what I was cut out for. But all of you, just one last question. And Tom, I think I'll start with you. So let's say 3-4 years out, is the skills gap narrower?
I think it could be narrower. You know, the community colleges last September got almost $20 million grant from the federal government to develop training programs primarily for displaced workers
For the 45, some of those 45 and up, as Stan talks
exactly.
about.
Exactly. To work in the areas of robotics and precision welding and things like that, I think we have an opportunity in New Hampshire to decide what our future is going to be, and our future lies in our own hands. And so public policymakers, business people, higher education people, K-12 people need to come together and think about what kind of future are we going to have in New Hampshire, what kind of educated citizenry do we need. And our prosperity is directly tied to the fact that we're a highly educated state. If we're going to maintain that status, we're going to have to work really hard on it.
Okay. And super quick thoughts from you, Fred Coker and Jim Roach.
One of the great things about New Hampshire is we're small. We can get our arms around things here a lot easier than can big states. And we're doing it with programs. I just mentioned too quickly. It's State Scholars that Tom mentioned earlier, where the business community is going to the high schools and help mentoring students to go into college and be college ready. Stay Work Play, which is a marketing program to get college grads connected to New Hampshire companies. Programs like that are working. And that's a good sign.
Okay. And Jim, real quick.
Well, I think we have a decent business climate in New Hampshire. And if we do this right, if we can address this issue, and I think the community colleges are on the way to doing that, manufacturers themselves are taking the bull by the horns. If we can get guidance counselors on board and parents and students to recognize the outstanding opportunities in manufacturing, high tech, I think we'd be in good shape 5-10 years down the road.
All right. Well, guys, this has been real interesting. Thank you all very much for coming in. Jim, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you.
Jim Roach, president of the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association, and Tom Horgan, good to see you.
Thanks, Laura.
Tom Horgan, president and CEO of the New Hampshire College and University Council. Fred Coker, thank you also.
Thank you, Laura.
Fred Coker, president of the New Hampshire High Technology Council. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.